How Reconstruction Still Shapes American Racism by Henry Louis Gates, Jr. During an interview with Chris Rock for my PBS series, African American Lives 2, we traced the ancestry of several well-known African Americans. When I told Rock that his great-great-grandfather, Julius Caesar Tingman, had served in the U.S. colored troops during the Civil War, enrolling on March 7, 1865, a little more than a month after the Confederates evacuated from Charleston, South Carolina, he was brought to tears. I explained that 7 years later, while still a young man in his mid-twenties, this same ancestor was elected to the South Carolina House of Representatives as part of that state's Reconstruction government. Rock was flabbergasted, his pride in his ancestor rivaled only by gratitude that Julius's story had been revealed at last. "It's sad that all this stuff was kind of buried, and that I went through a whole childhood and most of my adulthood not knowing," Rock said. "How in the world could I not know this?" I realized then that even descendants of black heroes of Reconstruction had lost the memory of their ancestors' heroic achievements. I have been interested in Reconstruction and its tragic aftermath since I was an undergraduate at Yale University, and I have been teaching works by black authors from the second half of the 19th century for decades. But the urgent need for a broader public conversation about the period first struck me only in that conversation with Rock. Reconstruction, the period in American history that followed the Civil War, was an era filled with great hope and expectations, but it proved far too short to ensure a successful transition from bondage to free labor for the almost 4 million black human beings who had been born into slavery in the U.S. during Reconstruction. The U.S. government maintained an active presence in the former Confederate states to protect the rights of the newly freed slaves and to help them, however incompletely, on the path to becoming full citizens. A little more than a decade later, the era came to an end when the contested presidential election of 1876 was resolved by trading the electoral votes of South Carolina, Louisiana, and Florida for the removal of federal troops from the last Southern state houses. Today, many of us know precious little about what happened during those years. But regardless of its brevity, Reconstruction remains one of the most pivotal eras in the history of race relations in American history, and probably the most misunderstood. Reconstruction was fundamentally about who got to be an American citizen. It was in that period that the Constitution was amended to establish birthright citizenship through the 14th Amendment, which also guaranteed equality before the law regardless of race. The 15th Amendment, ratified in 1870, barred racial discrimination in voting, thus securing the ballot for black men nationwide. As Eric Foner, the leading historian of the era, puts it, "The issues central to Reconstruction, citizenship, voting rights, terrorist violence, the relationship between economic and political democracy, continue to roil our society and politics today, making an understanding of Reconstruction even more vital." A key lesson of Reconstruction, and of its violent, racist rollback, is, Foner continues, that achievements thought permanent can be overturned, and rights can never be taken for granted. Another lesson this era of our history teaches us is that, even when stripped of their rights by courts, legislatures, and revised state constitutions, African Americans never surrendered to white supremacy. Resistance, too, is their legacy. In 1877, in a climate of economic crisis, the cost of protecting the freedoms of African Americans became a price the American government was no longer willing to pay. The long rollback began in earnest. The period of retrenchment, voter suppression, Jim Crow segregation, and quasi-re-enslavement that was called by white Southerners, ironically, redemption. As a worried Frederick Douglass, sensing the storm clouds gathering on the horizon, put it in a speech at the Republican National Convention on June 14, 1876, "You say you have emancipated us. You have, and I thank you for it. You say you have enfranchised us. and I thank you for it. But what is your emancipation? What is your enfranchisement? What does it all amount to if the black man, after having been made free by the letter of your law, is unable to exercise that freedom, and after having been freed from the slaveholder's lash, he is to be subject to the slaveholder's shotgun? What confounds me is how much longer the rollback of Reconstruction was than Reconstruction itself. How dogged was the determination of the redeemed South to obliterate any trace of the gains made by freed people. In South Carolina, for example, the state university that had been integrated during Reconstruction, indeed, Harvard's first black college graduate, Richard T. Greener, was a professor there, was swiftly shut down and reopened 3 years later for whites only. That color line remained in place there until 1963. In addition to their moves to strip African Americans of their voting rights, Redeemer governments across the South slashed government investments in infrastructure and social programs across the board, including those for the region's first state-funded public school systems, a product of Reconstruction. In doing so, they re-empowered a private sphere dominated by the white planter class. A new wave of state constitutional conventions followed, starting with Mississippi in 1890. These effectively undermined the Reconstruction amendments, especially the right of black men to vote in each of the former Confederate states by 1908. To take just one example, whereas in Louisiana, 130,000 black men were registered to vote before the state instituted its new constitution in 1898, by 1904, that number had been reduced to 1,342. And at what the historian Rayford W. Logan dubbed the nadir of American race relations, the time of political, economic, social, and legal hardening around segregation, widespread violence, disenfranchisement, and lynching coincided with a hardening of racist concepts of race. This painfully long period following Reconstruction saw the explosion of white supremacist ideology across an array of media and through an extraordinary variety of forms, all designed to warp the mind toward white supremacist beliefs. Minstrelsy and racist visual imagery were weapons in the battle over the status of African Americans in post-slavery America, and some continue to be manufactured to this day. The process of dehumanization triggered a resistance movement. Among a rising generation of the black elite, this resistance was represented after 1895 through the concept of the New Negro, a counter to the avalanche of racist images of black people that proliferated throughout Gilded Age American society in advertisements, posters, and postcards, helped along by technological innovations that enabled the cheap mass production of multicolored prints. Not surprisingly, racist images of black people, characterized by exaggerated physical features, the blackest of skin tones, the whitest of eyes, and the reddest of lips, were a favorite subject of these multicolored prints during the rollback of Reconstruction and the birth of Jim Crow segregation in the 1890s. We can think of the New Negro as Black America's first superhero, locked in combat against the white supremacist fiction of African Americans as Sambos, by nature lazy, mentally inferior, licentious, and beneath the surface, lurking sexual predators. The New Negro would undergo several transformations within the race between the mid-1890s and the Harlem Renaissance of the 1920s. But in its essence, it was a trope, summarized by one writer in 1928 as a continuously evolving mythological figure that would be drawn upon and revised over three decades by black leaders in the country's first social media war, the New Negro versus Sambo. The concept would prove to be quite volatile. Supposedly, new Negroes could be supplanted by even newer Negroes. For example, Booker T. Washington, the conservative accommodationist educator, would be hailed as the first new Negro in 1895, only to be dethroned exactly a decade later on the cover of the Voice of the Negro magazine by his nemesis, W.E.B. Du Bois, the Harvard-trained historian. Du Bois had globalized his version of the New Negro in a landmark photography exhibition at the 1900 Paris Exposition, and then, 3 years later, in his monumental work, The Souls of Black Folk, mounted a devastating attack on Washington's philosophy of race relations as dangerously complicitous with Jim Crow segregation and, especially, black male disenfranchisement. Du Bois, a founder of the militant Niagara Movement in 1905, would co-found the NAACP in 1909, and while Douglas had already seen the potential of photography to present an authentic face of black America, and thus to counteract the onslaught of negative stereotypes pervading American society, the children of Reconstruction were the ones who picked up the torch after his death in 1895. This new generation experimented with a range of artistic mediums to carve out a space for a new Negro who would lead the race and the country into the rising century, one whose racial attitudes would be more modern and cosmopolitan than those of the previous century, marred by slavery and civil war. When D.W. Griffith released his racist, lost cause fantasy film The Birth of a Nation in 1915, new Negro activists responded not only with protest, but also with support for African-American artists like the pioneering independent producer and director Oscar Michaud, whose reels of silent films exposed the horrors of white supremacy while advancing a fuller, more humanistic take on black life. Their pushback against redemption took many forms. Denied the ballot box, African-American women and men organized political associations, churches, schools, and social clubs, both to nurture their own culture and to speak out as forcefully as they could against the suffocating oppression unfolding around them. Though brutalized by the shockingly extensive practices of lynching and rape, reinforced by terrorism and vigilante violence, they exposed the crimes and hypocrisy of white supremacy in their own newspapers and magazines, and in marches and political rallies. But no weapon was drawn upon more frequently than images of the new Negro and what the historian Evelyn Higginbotham calls the politics of respectability. Assaulted by the degrading, mass-produced imagery of the lost cause, its romanticization of the Old South and stereotypes of Sambo and the old Negro, they avidly counterpunched with their own images of modern women and men, which they widely disseminated in journalism, photography, literature, and the arts. Drawing on the tradition of agitation epitomized by the black Reconstruction congressmen, such as John Mercer Langston, and former abolitionists, such as the inimitable Douglas, the children of Reconstruction would lay the foundation for the civil rights revolution to come in the 20th century. But what also seems clear to me today is that it was in that period that white supremacist ideology, especially as it was transmuted into powerful new forms of media, poisoned the American imagination in ways that have long outlasted its origin. You might say that anti-black racism once helped fuel an economic system, and that black crude was pumped and freighted around the world. Now, more than a century and a half since the end of slavery in the U.S., it drifts like a toxic oil slick as the supertanker lists into the sea. When Dylann Roof murdered the Reverend Clementa Pinckney and the eight other innocents in Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, on June 17, 2015, he didn't need to have read any of this history. It had, unfortunately, long become part of our country's cultural DNA, and it seems imprinted on his own. It is important that we both celebrate the triumphs of African Americans following the Civil War and explain how the forces of white supremacy did their best to undermine those triumphs, then and in all the years since, through to the present.